When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to this. It is the Rugby Dungeon. Thank you for watching, thank you for listening, thank you for subscribing. And yes, I did say watching, because although you're listening to the podcast version, you can find this very podcast on YouTube with the video of me talking to today's guest. And if you really like it, go and help us by supporting us on Patreon. You can also find us on Twitter. I'm at Jay Beardmore. This podcast is at the Rugby Dungeon, and of course there is Egg Chasers at Rugby Podcast. Enough of that. Let's get into it. Okay. Mark that. Right. Give me a second.
No worries.
Ah, there it is. Right. Well, I'm joined by Josh Bayliss. Josh, how are you?
Yeah, no, good, thank you. Happy to be back, getting stuck in, playing. Yeah, happy to get the win over in Italy, definitely.
Yeah, have you just come back from a short layoff?
Yeah, no, so I got concussed in a game against Northampton about 5 weeks ago.
Okay.
And it's my third concussion within a sort of fairly short period, so they take that sort of pretty seriously, as they should. And
yeah,
I needed sort of a little bit of extra time to make sure I was all good when I came back. But yeah, no, happy to get the first game back under the belt.
And how are you feeling? How was your time off?
It's a strange one at the moment, isn't it? Because like time off's not really time off.
Yeah.
But no, it was. I played sort of quite a lot of rugby. So in a way, it's probably quite good for the body just to get a couple of weeks of not actually going out the weekend and sort of smashing your body to pieces. Which was quite good. Good to get refreshed and. But ultimately, I definitely miss being out there. That's what we do it for. I absolutely love playing. So it was a shame I couldn't miss a couple of those games. And then obviously timing with the sort of first call up into Scotland, which was pretty cool, and then a little bit frustrating with timing, not being able to spend a bit more time up there. But yeah, no, they're happy that it hasn't been longer and. Get back into the swing of things now.
Yeah, well, you say you love playing. It certainly comes across in your style of play.
Oh, that's good. That's why I think everyone who plays professional rugby, training is amazing. It's brilliant. Don't get me wrong, but the reason we play is to go out there on the weekend and normally in front of crowds, which makes it even more special. But I mean, still, it's an amazing experience going out, running out on a pitch with your mates and getting to chuck a ball around for a living. Definitely consider myself pretty lucky.
Yeah, I was watching your game yesterday against Zebre, and that was one of those games where you desperately needed a crowd. I just felt like because you're away as well, with Zebre going up the way that they did, I thought if you just had a few just a few people there, it would have been a real spectacle.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of those. It was a real sort of scrappy game. Probably not that great to watch. Actually, definitely not that great to watch.
Oh, I quite enjoyed it.
Oh, okay. Maybe one for the purists. But no, it's one of those games. It's obviously knockout rugby now in Europe, which is great. It's where we want to be as a club. And yeah, definitely happy we came out on the right end of that result. That's for sure.
Who have you got next up then? Because you've done Zebre. Is it Northampton?
No, it's London Irish.
Oh, is it?
Friday night London Irish. So a repeat of the game last week.
Yeah. I'm interested, what was your reaction to that game last week? Because there is a little bit of rivalry between London Irish and Bath. And I felt that was quite a tasty game, actually.
Yeah, no, it was. I mean, I'm watching it, you could see there was plenty of sort of venom in most of the game, which was how we want to play the game. And probably it definitely made for a good watch. The boys were gutted, like absolutely gutted after the game. We don't want to lose any game. But I mean, I guess to lose a game in that manner, sort of our discipline let us down in terms of those cards, yellow cards and red cards. To go down to 12 men, but then still to show that character that the boys did in the last 20 minutes to get back into the game was what we're all about as a club. I think we've shown through periods this season that when sort of things are against us, we've had injuries in a number of different positions. When our backs are against the wall, we really do come out swinging, which sort of just shows the character of the boys and the characters that we've got in the team, which is only a good thing, really.
Yeah, it must be quite difficult for you as a player because obviously you train all week, you're prepared for the game, and all your systems and structures are based around having 15 men. Then to have three simultaneous cards, was it not, against London Irish in one go? That must be enormously frustrating.
Yeah, it's tricky. You obviously sort of you train with 14 people, maybe 13 people, but you never sort of go down to the contingency of 12 people, really. And it is tricky, and like, these things do happen, though, especially the way that the game's being reffed more recently, especially this season. Like, most games, you're seeing cards, and it's going to happen. It's just the way it is, and we've just got to sort of adapt to that if and when it happens, and be ready for when it does happen. The teams that are best prepared for that are probably going to be the ones that are going to be most successful going forward, I think.
So I've heard of teams training with 14. I've never heard of a team training with 13. Do you do that frequently?
Not frequently. I mean, we do quite a lot of training 13 on 13, but that's more of sort of a numbers thing. But we definitely, we do a couple of drills where we'll sort of be defending in our 22, and each phase, one of the defenders, two of the defenders will drop out until you're defending
with not many people.
It's a really good drill, and sort of gets you, see how long you can last with decreasing number of players. It's actually worked out pretty well. It's been good for us.
So I've been looking you up on various rugby websites and all the rest of it. I just wanted to know how did you end up in Bath?
How long do you want me to go back?
As long as you feel comfortable.
So I'll go through it briefly. I mean, I grew up. Was born in Devon. My dad works overseas, works in Indonesia, Singapore, that sort of area. And so born in England, moved over to Indonesia when I was really young, and obviously didn't play any sport or anything over there. Then moved back to go to school in England when I was maybe 6 or 7. So moved back with my mum, my sister. We went to Wellington School in Somerset.
Yeah, I know it.
So not Wellington College, Wellington School.
Oh, hang on. Right. No, I don't know that.
Yeah.
So I read it. Wellington College. Why on earth did you go from Wellington to... Yeah, okay.
No. It was just a small school, and my mum then took me and my sister for a scholarship there at Millfield when I was 10. My sister must have been 8 or 9. Managed to get a scholarship, both of us, so we both moved there. Went all the way through at Millfield, and obviously Millfield's in the Bath catchment area.
Stupid question then. Was it a sports scholarship that you went for at age 10?
It's like an all-round one, because I mean, I was 10, my sister's 8, 9.
I was going to say, that's quite some Bristol scouting ability, like Millfield, which Millfield had got there.
Yeah. No, they more like an all-round scholarship. And I don't know how I managed to fluke that. My sister's very clever, so that didn't surprise me. But I somehow managed to scrape that. And then obviously played loads of different sports whilst I was there. Milford's like, it's incredible for sport.
Yeah.
I never really, well, I absolutely loved rugby, but never thought, oh, this could be something I could do, or I never thought I'd be good enough, definitely, and didn't really take it seriously until I was in the senior school, probably about 15, 16, so that's probably when I started with Bath Academy as well.
Yeah.
Then thought, yeah, like, this is pretty cool, this is now my favourite sport. But still, at that stage, I'm like, well, I'll play this whilst I'm at school, maybe go to uni and play some more. And then obviously carried on, played Bath under 18s, played for the first team at Millfield. And then, lucky enough, got offered an academy contract. And I was like, all right, this is pretty cool.
Pretty cool, yeah.
And then obviously, yeah, went on from there, 2 years in the academy, and then my third season in the first team that. It's crazy how quickly it's gone.
Yeah. So are you from a rugby playing family at all, or is it all just from school?
Yeah, no, my dad played rugby, and his dad played a lot of rugby as well. Played for Lydney.
What? Where?
Lydney.
Whereabouts that?
Gloucestershire.
Okay.
My granddad is a bit of a sort of a club legend there. actually, he's quite funny. In my first year, me and the two other guys that were signed in my year, we got sent on loan to Lydney.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I was like, this is so cool. Like, yeah. Such a small world. Unfortunately, we didn't actually play because it turned out that it was too low a league, I think.
That's right, yeah.
So allowed to play in.
In the Premiership, I think you can only go as low as one below the Championship.
Yeah, so this was two below the Championship.
Oh, I see.
So we went for a couple of training sessions, and we'd all got named in the team for the weekend and everything. I was like, this is going to be crazy. I'm going to run out for the same team my dad and my granddad did. It was going to be pretty cool, but obviously it never happened, but still pretty cool nonetheless.
Well, I don't know what it says in your contract, but I think you could play second team without signing a registration form.
Oh, okay. I might have to see if I can pull a few strings there.
Because Jerry Collins famously played for... Who was it he played for? He played for someone in Gloucestershire.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he had like a one-off game. He rocked up and played third team. And this is when he was playing at Toulon or somewhere. He rocked up and played third team for like Taunton or somewhere. I can't remember where. But because he didn't have to register, it was absolutely fine. Although I think Bath might have something to say about that.
Yeah, maybe. I might have to try and keep it quiet. Yeah.
So were you always back five? Because looking at the way you play, it doesn't escape me that you're rather fast.
I actually used to be a prop.
Really?
So I went the other way, yeah. So I wasn't... I probably had a bit of a growth spurt when I was 16... Well, 15, 16 was when I got a little bit taller. But before then, I was by no means one of the tallest. So I guess that sort of lent itself to being a front rower. And obviously, scrummaging isn't such a big thing when you're a young kid. So found myself in the front row and then played. Then, yeah, probably moved to second row and then eventually to back row. But I've never played in the backs.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Actually, until this season when I ended up on the wing against Worcester for the last 20 minutes of the game or whatever.
Think you can make the switch over to the wing?
Oh, I'm not sure. I love being in the back row. I just love it as a position. I'm not sure I'd be able to make that switch. And the stuff that the guys do on the wing is absolutely incredible. The skills that they've got, it would definitely take a lot to try and transfer.
Well, I mean, particularly at Bath, I mean, you've got likes of Will Muir, who's come out of nowhere, who looks absolutely great. McConaughey's done basically the same thing. Rocco Degooni, who they poached from the army, but he's absolutely brilliant on his day. Yeah, you've got some good players there.
Oh, we've got some crazy, crazy players. I mean, you haven't even mentioned Big Joe there.
No.
Cognizant, he's pretty special as well. And like you say, the depth is... But Gabe Hammer-Webb...
Oh, God, I've not even mentioned Anthony Watson.
Anthony Watson.
Apparently, he's pretty good.
Yeah, apparently so. Darren Atkins. Like, honestly, a lot of these guys are young as well, which is so actually reflects the whole squad as well. We've got a real core group of young guys at the moment, and even more coming through. I mean, looking at the guys in the academy, it's pretty exciting to see. It's definitely a team that I'd want to be part of moving forward.
Yeah.
Very exciting.
Just before I probe a little deeper on that, who were the other guys out of interest in Millfield that went professional the same time as you did?
So in my year, Gabe Ogre.
I think he's absolutely awesome.
He's honestly one of the most skillful players I've played with.
That's interesting, because I don't really pick that up when I watch him play. I just love the attitude he has of going back row, hooker, you know, no issue, just doesn't care.
He played, like, I remember him playing, played a bit in the centre at school. We played number eight, played hooker.
Yeah.
He played a lot of sevens as well. He was really good sort of in the midfield in sevens. He just set up countless number of tries. I played with him, obviously, at school, and was at Bath for a little bit, and now at Wasp, doing really well.
I didn't realise that he was at Bath.
Yeah, no, so he was there for a year.
Mm-hmm.
Which was, obviously knew him from school, had really good mates with Gabe, he's a top bloke.
Mm. And the other one?
A guy called Josh Barton, who plays for Coventry.
Oh, okay.
Was at London Scottish, moved to Coventry. And then obviously you got the guys a year above me, so Adam Hastings, Darren Atkins, who's at Bath. Year above that, Callum Sheedy.
Oh, wow.
And then you go even higher, it's Chris Cook, Jonathan Joseph, Henry Thomas.
Yeah.
Mako Vinopola, all these guys.
So
it's pretty sort of rich stock at Millfield.
Yeah, so your year and a couple of years above seems to be pretty famous for creating wonderful Celtic talent.
Well, yeah, it seems to be. It's just a great environment.
Yeah.
I absolutely love my rugby at school. It was some of the best memories I've got. You're playing with your best mates, you're having loads of fun. It's incredible.
And do they make a big deal out of who has come before you at Millfield? Do they say, like, you're filling the shoes of Adam Hastings or whoever it is? Is there a sense of stepping into a bigger thing?
In a way, but at the same time, like the coaches they've got there, so like John Mallet and John Brimacombe, the main two sort of first team coaches, they just want you to express yourself and be who you are.
Mm.
And it's incredible, the way that school rugby's going and was going whilst I was at school, all these other schools, you've got your head coaches who are basically trying to make teams like professional environments.
And yeah,
there's a lot to be said for that, don't get me wrong, the physio, strength and conditioning side of things. I think it's great to have that almost mini professional environment.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, you've got to be able to express yourself and enjoy your rugby. And I think a lot of other schools, were sort of forcing trying to force a style of rugby upon the players that didn't necessarily bring the best out of them.
Mm.
I think Millfield would never do that. They're always sort of player first and what's best for you and not what's best for the school's record or whatever, which is amazing. I think it's a testament to, like I said, John Mallet, John Remacombe and all of the other rugby staff there. Some great people there.
Yeah, if you like your rugby and you want to get some extra very high quality matches, you could do much worse than watching schools like Millfield, Sebba, all of these schools, organisations, whatever you want to call them. They are like miniature professional teams. They're almost like, if they had more coverage, sort of like the standard of US college football. They are rather good.
Yeah, no, I remember, probably been a couple of years ago now, went back to watch the Millfield Sebba game, which was always the big game of the year. I genuinely haven't watched a live game and had that much fun for a really long time.
Yeah.
I was completely glued to the game. It was incredible. The level of skill, some of the physicality, it was just awesome. It was very impressive.
Did you play against Cam Redpath when you were at school?
No, so Cam would be a year below me or 2 years below me. I didn't get to play in my final year of school. Had a shoulder injury.
Yeah.
So if it weren't for that, I might have done, which would have been quite.
Yeah, quite. Yeah. So just going back to something you said before, Bath are quite a young team. Would you say that might be one of the reasons that, although in patches you look like potential Premiership champions, you just have these occasional lapses, or there's something just not quite connecting across the team at the moment?
Yeah, no, it could be down to that, and it's like you say, it's frustrating because we've shown what we can do, and I know it's within us, and we've got an incredible amount of talent and guys that really want to work hard as well. It's not like we're going out sort of training a little bit and throwing the ball around on the weekend and having a laugh. Like, these guys want to get better every day. They want to push each other, and the competitive nature of the squad and pushing guys for places is brilliant, and it's just driving standards, which is exactly what we want. But like you say, like, there's been a few games where we've been inconsistent and it hasn't worked for us, and it could be due to experience, but it's something we're working hard on, and it's definitely not through lack of effort.
Yeah,
potentially even sort of trying to force things.
It seems like you've just got these hard to describe it, really, like a catastrophic, I guess, like a catastrophic malfunction. Because you watch Bath for the first 5 minutes, you think, "Crikey, that's incredible!" And I'm talking not with Anthony Watson and, you know, Talupe Faletau and all those boys. I'm talking about, you know, when they're gone, you still put together some incredible rugby. And I imagine during the analysis sessions on the Monday, you think, well, how on earth, when we've displayed that we're that much better than the other team, have we still not got that result?
Yeah, no, like you say, it's exactly like that. And I guess for us, we know we're going in the right direction, and yes, it's incredibly frustrating that we've had these times when it's not quite working for us. It's not quite stringing together. But I think the guys have an understanding that, yes, we really want to be better right now, but we're building something that hopefully can be a really successful team, a really strong team over a number of years. And that's why these young guys are so important to us and for us.
I mean, I can definitely see that. And I actually think Bath have been better when they've stuck with the team that has done so well for them over the international period. I actually think sometimes you turn over the team too quickly because, you know, I look at the back row, for instance. I think you and Miles Reid have been the outstanding players there since the start of the season, really. And then when they turn over the team in one go, sometimes I just think it might be too much change, or I don't know, maybe you've got too much talent to pick from.
Yeah, I don't think it's possible to have too much talent. It's like, we're incredibly fortunate that the guys that we've got, and even the guys in the back row, it's been a real blessing, I think, having to fight so hard for my position. And like you say, Marzi's been doing unbelievable this season.
He's a great player.
But I've known for years now. You guys obviously haven't seen him play. He's been unlucky with injuries. But we've had to sort of really fight and learn a lot from a lot of these other seasoned sort of international players. And that's been brilliant. Because it just drives us. It drives them as well when we're training hard and pushing for places. And it just makes it that much more special when you do get to pull on the shirt and represent the city and the club. There's no better feeling than sort of running out with a guy like Miles, who, you know, has the same belief and passion for the club that I do. It's pretty cool.
So just on you then and your development, how far off do you think you are from nailing down a starting spot? Because yes, you've been starting all the way through, but then you add in all of the starters. What do you think you need to do And where is your comparative advantage? Also, what position is it that you really want to nail down?
It's a great question. Positionally, I'm not sure. I'm more than comfortable, more than happy playing anywhere in the back row. I've even loved playing in the second row this season. It's something I never thought I'd do.
Yeah,
especially sort of Premiership level, probably the lightest Premiership second.
I was going to say, because you're big, but you're not massive.
No. Absolutely not. No. I've been sort of trying to put on weight for a few years. It's slowly coming, but definitely not to sort of second row levels.
Yeah.
I think the thing that's so good about the back row that we've got is it's so diverse.
Mm.
I wouldn't say we've got anyone the same as anyone else.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Which is great. And like, yes, there's that one standpoint which is like, well, I'll never sort of nail down a starting position or a role that I'll play the whole season, just because it depends on who we play and the style that we want to play.
That's a nice way to put it, yeah.
Particular game. And the way it's worked, I mean, we've never actually had all of our back rows fit at the same time.
Mm.
So there's always been sort of one or two injuries or little niggles that have kept guys out of the team, which means we're forced to have this sort of back row. And I think I see it as a real positive for the club and for the success of the club, being able to play. If you want to play sort of a back row, you can play Miles, Sam and Toby. You can play Zach at 8, Toby at 6, Sam at 7. You play Mikey Williams at 6.
Oh, God, I forgot about him,
Miles,
yeah.
Miles at 7, Zach at 8. Honestly, the combinations are pretty much endless. Tommy Ellis at 6.
Mm.
You can play Mikey at 7 and then Zach at 8. It's pretty cool, I think.
Yeah,
that we've got all that depth.
So what do you see yourself as? 6?
I've probably played most of my rugby at 6, especially this season and the end of last season.
Mm-hmm.
The season before that and the one before that, I played most rugby at 7.
Yeah.
I've also played a bit at 8 over the last few years. Honestly, doesn't really change how I play that much.
Yeah.
But I'm never going to be Sam Underhill 7, for example, because I just don't have the natural ability or skill set that he's got. But I mean, if you want a 7 that can sort of get around the park and jackal for some ball and sort of be that sort of 7, then I can sort of fill that role. And again, if you want a 6 that's going to be a massive ball carrier and a real momentum gainer, you probably look at someone like Zach or Toby.
Mm.
So it's a great question, and it's a tricky one to answer, really.
Yeah. So I mean, tell me if I'm wrong here, but when I watch you play, I think your point of difference is energy, and I'd be interested to know if that bears out in stats and what you see in analysis, actually, because no matter what is happening, whether you're playing the amazing rugby that Bath does or you find yourself on that swing of momentum as occasionally happens, you always seem to be in the thick of things. And I wonder if is that actually reflected in your interventions and, you know, your fitness scores and all the rest of it?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I don't always feel that energetic when I'm out there. but, yeah, no, it's something I definitely pride myself on. I never want to be outworked.
Mm.
I guess it's something I've loved about playing rugby ever since I started, is the that sort of dark place in a way that you've got to take yourself to.
Yeah.
I see it mostly as mental. And I think a lot of guys are able to go just to that limit.
Yeah.
And the really, really successful guys will be able to take themselves above that. But a lot of people will think when they hit that point, that's it, and then sort of they'll float around that area. And I, I'd love to be able to continuously push myself past that. And I think it is a lot mental, mostly mental.
Yeah.
That sort of extra 5% that you've got in you, that you don't necessarily know that you've got in you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And that sort of feeling after a game when you know you've gone there, it's indescribable. I combine that with going to that place alongside your teammates, you get in the change room after a game, you win or lose, you look each other in the eye, and it's an incredible feeling because you know you've put it all out there for each other.
And when you say it feels great, do you mean like it literally feels great, you know, like the runner's high, or do you just mean in retrospect, looking back at it, yeah, I've given all that I can give?
Yeah, no, it doesn't feel great in the moment when you're trying to get there. It's hard to describe when you really push yourself. It's like a sort of out of body experience.
Mm.
But yeah, that sort of being able, that retrospective look back and look like after a game, you're talking to your teammates and you're like, oh, do you remember that bit where we were just like, we were completely out on our feet, but we kept going and we made that next breakdown, or that, like, that's the reason they scored that try, is because we got to that clear out. And that's the rewarding bit for me.
Yeah.
That's what I love.
It must make you quite judgmental towards other players that don't work quite as hard.
No, not at all. It's everyone's got a different skill set and different perception of hard work. And the guys that we've got at the club, I can't stress enough, like, everyone will push themselves for their teammates. That's just the characters that we've got in the group.
Yeah.
And that's incredible. Because that's all you can ask for from the guys either side of you is to give their all. Whatever their 100% is. If they give that, then you can never question. I know I like mistakes and stuff are going to happen in games, but if guys are giving 100%, then that's all I would want to see, and we can ask for.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned before giving your all for the shirt and the passion you have for the club. I really do think Bath is a special club. You know, if you were to design a fantasy rugby career, you might throw in Stade Français to lose, and then if you're going to come over to England, you'd almost certainly put in Bath. Do you get that feeling when you're walking around the town and whatnot?
Oh, it's completely. But I've got for me, I think being able to have been through the academy and been here for such a long time, like at the start, so in my first year when I first joined, I'd have been happy to play at any Premiership Championship club in the country.
Mm.
But as you sort of move through, you create the bonds with the people at the club, the support staff, the supporters, the fans. Everyone, I've got to a point now where this is the only club I truly love, and I honestly do anything for the club and for the city. And like you say, that feeling when I walk in from my flat, if we've got a home game, I'll walk through town down to the game. And obviously at the moment it's slightly different.
Yeah.
But when there's a full stadium, which it always is at the Rec, town is absolutely buzzing, and you're just walking through and you're like, I'm so lucky to be able to do this and to do it in a city like this,
yeah,
in front of these people. It's honestly, it's like goosebumps every time.
I've got to say, when I went to watch Bath Exeter, and it must have been like 5 years ago or some such thing, and you walk over the bridge into the stadium, and it was a nice clear day, and it just felt awesome. It felt like that. I mean, it is actually the only show in town, but it also feels that way.
Exactly. Now, like you say, it's the only thing going on, and on a game day, the whole city is buzzing with rugby fans, which I don't think you really get anywhere else in England.
No, maybe Exeter.
Maybe Exeter's a good shout. And then the only other thing would be sort of Twickenham on an England game day.
Yeah.
But I mean, having the stadium in the middle of the city, it's incredible. And there's the stadium development that's been in the works for a long time now is
decades.
Another thing which is really, I just hope I'm here when that all happens.
Do you though? Because I sort of think that the special thing about Bath is you've got those temporary stands and there's people in flats looking over and you've got all the architecture. I mean, I think I'd rather double the price of season tickets rather than build a new stand, but that's me.
I definitely see the point. I guess my perspective is if we can get more people cheering for Bath in a stadium whilst maintaining, and I think the important thing is that the only way that they could build a new stadium is by respecting the architecture and the place that the stadium's in, and so I think it would be very considered design if it were to be done, and to have a potentially a bit of a firmer surface might be quite nice.
I'm sort of
complain about that.
I'm so glad you say that you embrace it and you love and that you love the club, because I have spoke to a few players who have been through Bath before, come out the other side, and although they've enjoyed their time there, they do find the whole thing very overwhelming.
Yeah, no, I guess I can see that. And there's like when I was younger and sort of coming through the ranks, it probably is a bit daunting, and like I'm still really nervous before every game, and and you want to perform, and you want to perform for the club and for the city. I think having that really close tie to the place and to the club that you play at can only be a good thing.
Yeah.
But I can only see myself having a stronger and stronger emotional connection to the place as time goes on, which I think is a positive thing, and I think the more guys that we have playing and representing the club that have a real close tie to it, or a real emotional connection with it, can only be a positive thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's the way that it's going.
I mean, I do worry about that a little bit. I mean, I do think, like, you know, the business of sport, and it can be so cutthroat, maybe not putting your eggs in one basket might be a wise move. I just thinking about the Mike Brown situation now, and I think, you know, it's one thing loving a club, but it's another thing that them always loving you back, I guess.
Yeah, no, it's professional sport, and it is a tricky one, but at the same by the same token, like, everything I owe so much. The way I see it is that I owe incredible amounts to the people and to the club for what they've done for me so far. But anything past my first academy contract, I see as a bonus. Like, that's honestly, that's me living my absolute dream.
Yeah.
And so anything I can do to and for the club, I'm more than happy to do. And it's going to end at some point. It just is. However, that happens, and that will obviously be incredibly sad. And for someone like me with such a love for the club, it would sting. But I know that the people at the club and like even high up at the club have an incredible humility and and connection with the players mm-hmm. that I don't think you see at other clubs necessarily.
Yeah.
I can't speak for other clubs, but I know when that time comes that it would obviously be incredibly sad. But I would like to think it'd be handled in the best way possible and for the betterment of the club. And if a decision was made that is for the best of the club, then I'd 100% agree with it, even if it did mean it wasn't necessarily the best for me.
Excellent. Well, let me just change subject a little bit.
Yeah.
Can you imagine a 19-year-old Josh Bayliss and during Six Nations time, who would you be cheering for?
It's a great question. Honestly, I never even thought about international rugby as a possibility for myself. So I didn't not support England.
Yeah.
I did not support Scotland. I did not support Ireland. Whoever. I loved watching rugby. I loved watching Six Nations, especially. There's nothing better than watching on a Saturday afternoon, Sunday afternoon, sitting down and watching the Six Nations. With a full crowd and the commentary is incredible. It's just a great spectacle. I'm more like watching players. I probably watch more Southern Hemisphere rugby when I was young.
Okay.
That's what my dad wanted me to watch and what he would watch. So I remember watching like Richie McCaw, obviously, Jerry Collins, you mentioned him earlier, mm-hmm. Those guys. And I wasn't supporting New Zealand. I was supporting Jerry Collins or Richie McCaw or whoever I'd sort of fixated on at that point. Mm-hmm. And I guess it was like purely from just enjoying watching the game. And if you'd have told me in 3-4 years time you'll be asked to go into camp with Scotland, for example, I'd be like, yeah, that's honestly a really funny joke and whatever, and yeah, that's never going to happen.
Well, I would hold your feet to the fire more on that, because I think a lot of people wouldn't believe you, except for the fact that I too have no international allegiances, so I will let you off.
Oh, thanks. Yeah.
So Scotland got in contact. Was this completely out of the blue? Did you know that they were looking at you?
No, it's like I said. It's I always knew. Obviously, my grandmother's born in Aberdeen. I knew I could.
Okay. Is that on your mum's side? Your dad's side?
Dad's side.
Okay.
So I mean, I knew technically that I could qualify for Scotland, but I guess sort of tying back into a point I made earlier with the competition in the back row at Bath.
Mm.
I've spent my whole career trying to get into the Bath team and trying to sort of make my way there and do what I could for the club and try and sort of establish myself as a club player.
Mm.
Never had I thought or was thinking, I could be in the sort of international picture here, or I need to this or that. It was never that. It was always playing for Bath, and so it was out of the blue. And I obviously got the call, spoke to Gregor, and I guess when I was speaking to him, I was obviously amazed and kind of expected him to sort of say, right, well, we're going to watch your games. We're watching your games. We like what you're doing, and we'll maybe think about you for the summer or something like that, or keep going, and we'll stay in contact. And then he sort of came around to it, and he said, look, we want you in next week.
Yeah.
For the France week. And I was like, really? And he was like, yeah, we want you in. We've had a couple of injuries. And he was like, look, obviously it's a tough decision. It means you've got to play for Scotland and whatever. And honestly, it wasn't really a tough decision for me. It's an incredible opportunity, and one I wouldn't be able to live myself if I turned it down.
Absolutely not.
It just made a lot of sense to go for it. Mm-hmm. The style of rugby they play, how they sort of saw me fitting into the structure there, and went for it. And the next week I was up there training, and unfortunately the France game got cancelled, and ended up coming back and playing for Bath, then got concussed. So
obviously is that what happened?
Couldn't go back up to camp, which was gutting.
Right. Okay.
But really glad that I did get up there for that week.
Yeah, so I knew you had to come back from camp because of an injury. I didn't realise. I thought you got the concussion, actually, even though you have told me in the interview. I thought you got injured up in Scotland camp, so that makes more sense now.
Okay. No. It was back down here, yeah.
So what is the process? Does your phone randomly ring and it's Gregor? Did they phone the team manager? And then also, once you get that phone call, who do you phone first? I presume your mum?
Yeah, no, it was... Parents, I phoned first, my mum, my dad, and my grandmother as well.
I bet.
Who was absolutely over the moon. It was my agent. He actually spoke to me and said, look, the SRU have been in contact and would like to arrange a call. And I was like, oh, okay.
Right. Cool.
Yeah, let's do it. And then I don't know whether it was that same day or the next day. Just got the call and that was it, really. And then after that, I spoke to Steve Tandy, the defence coach, and JD, the forwards coach. And they were great. They just sort of tried to get me up to speed with everything and sort of said they were excited to get me on board and talk through how they want to play. It was quite a sort of... I went from sort of sitting on the sofa after a day of training at Bath, not even thinking about international rugby, to next minute was going to go up and join the Scottish boys in camp.
And it is a bloody long drive. That's
the
other thing.
Flight, thankfully.
Oh, did you? I was going to say, did you share a lift with Cam?
No. So Cam was obviously injured at that stage.
Oh, yeah.
So I actually got the plane up with Jamie Batty, who's at Bath as mm-hmm. well, and then met a couple of the boys at the airport, so the Gloucester boys and the Exeter boys as well, and then flew up with them.
Yeah, it's quite a big contingent, that, actually, particularly when you include the Exeter boys.
Exactly. Yeah. No. It's it was quite nice. I sort of obviously incredibly nervous going up, and it was nice to be able to meet those guys before. Going into this sort of wider environment.
Yeah, I was going to ask that because you've got a very professional demeanour about you. When you enter the international camp, what's your first move? Do you wander around and shake everyone's hand and introduce yourself, or do you wait to be introduced to, or you know, how do you play that?
It's tricky. I'm naturally quite sort of quiet and almost shy. I guess I was shy as a young kid and. It's pretty daunting sort of having all these people to meet. Like you say, do you sort of go straight in and shake everyone's hand, introduce yourself, and or do you let people sort of come and speak to you? But I can't speak highly enough of the staff, all the players up there. When I got there, they were all like incredibly welcoming. That actually made it a lot easier for me.
Yeah, I always ask this question, so I apologise to my listeners because I'm sure that they're absolutely sick of it. But like with your competitive nature, I guess it's that balance, isn't it, between do you just let rip as soon as you get your boots on and try and make an impression, or do you just try and find a nice little niche for yourself and hope you get noticed? What is the approach to training?
Honestly, I don't really think about having any approach. Like,
really?
I'd like to... Like there's just the way I play rugby, the way I train is how it is.
But they must run a drill or something, and you must go, yeah, that this is something which I'll be really good at now. I can definitely show the better side of my game.
Obviously, there's stuff that's going to suit you more, and you do need to get used to how different teams train, because there can be massive variances in how teams train between coaches and having different players and stuff. And so it took a little while just to sort of get into the rhythm of things and how they want to train and how they want to play. But the I love training. That's where I sort of express myself. I'm, like I said earlier, I'm not the most expressive person. I'm definitely not the most extroverted of people. So for me, that's like the training fields. That's where I get to do my thing and to really sort of let loose and enjoy myself. So my style of rugby isn't flashy or that all singing or dancing anyway. It's sort of pretty standard, pretty straightforward. Just love hard work, and so that's how I train. That's how I like to play. So there's I wouldn't go and sort of try and stand out or do something that I wouldn't do normally, sort of thing.
Yeah.
I guess you just got to think you've got there by playing a certain way and by doing your own thing. They don't want to see you do something different. They want to sort of see you carry on doing what you do.
Now, Bath is full of international class stars. I mean, you literally have some world leaders there. Was there a big step up though going to Scotland, or is it kind of I've seen some of this intensity. I know pretty much what I'm up against.
It's a step up, no doubt. The style's a bit different, so it's very, very quick up in Scotland. The way that they play, I think you can see that with how they played the Six Nations. It's very sort of transition based.
Mm-hmm. Transition based. Just tell me about that a second. So, are you targeting quick turnovers, and then have you got some sort of put it through two hands, or what do you have? Do you have some sort of formula for that?
Honestly, I wasn't there long enough to sort of get all that sort of stuff, and my head was sort of exploding with all this information that I was sort of getting from one area or another. Honestly, trying to learn the lineouts, a lot of my time. But I mean, even the players that they've got, they suit that sort of quick style, that that tough carry, quick ball present, quick ball, and then sort of give it to Finn Russell with a bit of space and let him do his thing. And the players he's got around him to work off him. I think it's a lot of it revolves around hard work and working early and kick chase and that sort of stuff, which is all stuff that I love doing.
Yeah. Kick chase is one of those things, isn't it, where it is, for me, it's like the benchmark of how hard a player wants to work. Because you can easily hide. But the ones that don't, they love it.
Yeah, yeah. No, exactly. It's an area where, like you say, it's not what's going to be shown in the highlight reel on a Sunday night of Premiership Rugby highlights. Mm. You're not going to see people chasing kicks. You're going to see people scoring tries and doing all that, making cool kicks and stuff like that. But it's something that we pride ourselves on a Bath, is that sort of unseen work, we call it. So the bits that aren't going to get picked up externally, but you've done, and your mates know you've done, and your mates know that that's made the difference. And it's that tough clean out, or that tough ball carry, two phases before we've given it to Anthony on the wing and he's scored an incredible try, that's given him the opportunity to do what he does best. So yes, it's an incredible finish and incredible work by whoever it was scoring, but it's the work that doesn't get seen before that's key and crucial to allowing people like that to express themselves.
Yeah, because one of the Gregor Townsend things, it certainly was at Glasgow, whether it's changed or not, I don't see why it would change, but the 60-40 stuff, which is 60% of getting the ball back is all to do with the ball carrier doing the right things, his details, how he places the ball, and only 40% of it is to do with the clearing players. And I love that philosophy of how you get quick ball.
Yeah. No, like you're saying, it's very easy, and a lot of coaches will focus on the clear out and the guys clearing the ball out. But if your ball presents no good or your groundwork's no good, then it doesn't matter how good your clean is. It's not going to be the quickest possible ball.
Yeah.
So that's the first foremost thing is getting that ball present. And don't get me wrong, the clear out is incredibly important, especially up against a lot of teams who have very good breakdown players. But it, like you say, it's that ball carry that can negate some of the opposition's threats.
Well, we've got to be careful here, mate, because we might stray into proper rugby Norse territory. So,
we will indeed stop it there.
Thank you so much for joining me. What's your various social media handles? Where can we find you?
So Instagram is probably the only. I'm not really much of a social media kind of guy. But
you strike me as far too sensible for all that nonsense.
And I'm not sure about that, but the Instagram is j_Bayliss8. Mm-hmm. And that'd be really where you find me. Otherwise, mm-hmm. I've got a Twitter account. I don't use it. I was told to make one a few years ago.
And, oh really? By who? Who would give you such terrible advice?
I can't. It must have been one of the guys. It might have been my agent back then or someone. But yeah, no. More than happy to, if anyone's got any questions or whatever, just ping them over, and more than happily try and answer.
Cool.
As much as I can.
And last one before you go, and I wonder, yeah, where do you think that Bath will finish this year in the Premiership? Do you think you'll make the playoffs?
I think we definitely can. The way the Premiership's gone, it really is still all to play for.
Yeah, it is actually for that fourth position.
It's incredible to watch and incredible to see some of the results that have happened. Mm. It's such an open competition. Anyone can beat anyone on their day,
yeah,
home or away. We've got the players. We've got the drive and the hunger to do it. So I don't see why we can't. That's what we want to do. We want to challenge for silverware. We want to be a winning, successful club. And we've definitely got everything we need to be able to do that.
Actually, just before I do let you go, just thought, as a guy who is on the pitch week in, week out, who has impressed you so far with the way that they play? Because you've beat Sale, who are yep. third. How did you go against Bristol and Exeter?
Bristol, we struggled. It was a tough game. And that's the, again, coming back to that point about being frustrated, like we played that game and then, like you say, go away to Sale and put in one of our best performances I've sort of seen in the Bath shirt.
Yeah, agreed. You really well.
Incredible.
So much energy.
Yeah, exactly. I like the going back to that question about the guys that have impressed me, it's Spenny, since he's been here. Ben Spence has been incredible for us, both on and off the pitch. He's a great leader. He talks so well about the game, and his knowledge is incredible. Mentioned him earlier, Miles. He's been great for us. But that's not a surprise for me. I've known he's an incredible player and a great bloke for a long time now. Obviously, Will Muir. Mm-hmm. He's been great, and he's another one of those who just stuck his head down and just worked and grafted and earned his spot in the team, and then sort of shone from there. But obviously, what you don't see on TV is that he's worked through a number of small, really frustrating injuries he's had since he's been at the club, and he's just always worked back and worked hard and works one of the hardest guys workers at training.
Yeah.
Even the young guys, Orlando Bailey, who's got a couple of starts recently.
Yeah, just tell me about him. I know that I was wrapping up the podcast and about to say goodbye. But Orlando Bailey fascinates me because you've got Dan Cipriani coming in next year. Yet to see how that's going to work out. And ultimately, Danny Cipriani's getting on a bit in age. He'll be brilliant for you certainly, but. Someone's gonna have to take over, and I wonder if it will be Orlando Bailey.
He's an incredible character. I just forget it's his first year.
Yeah.
I just find myself forgetting that he's not been here for 3 or 4 years. That the way his presence is great. He's got a very calming presence. He prepares very well, like a seasoned professional.
Mm.
Like he knows. He's done it before, which is, I guess, one of the sort of highest compliments I can give him as a 10. Talent-wise, there's no question his talent is limitless. He is very, very special talent.
Interesting.
And yeah, I think he's going to be great for the club. I really do. His temperament and the way he sees the game, the way he speaks to people, I think it's he's going to be someone definitely to watch. And then guy outside him on the weekend, Max Ajomo. He's another one of those who you forget.
And his dad's a legend.
His dad's a legend, exactly. So he's got that deep connection to the club. Both these guys are Bath sort of born and bred guys. And Max is, you forget, it's only his second year, and he's training better than anyone almost. He's always knocking on the door. He's been consistently training for the last year or so at a level that is incredible for someone his age.
Yeah.
And his experience. Again, a guy who's got limitless talent.
I do find it amazing how these young lads either play in the pack, because I think obviously, you know, the physicality of the pack is daunting, no matter what age you are, actually. But the fly halves, like if you're 19, I remember watching Marcus Smith play against Ulster in the Heineken Cup, age 19, bossing around Jamie Roberts. I think, you know, what kind of character is that? You know, Jamie Roberts is a lion, and here he is telling him which line to run and all the rest of it.
Yeah. No, Marcus. I know Marcus a little bit, and he's unbelievable temperament. A great guy, and these guys just know how to speak to people. And like you say, he'd have been bossing Jamie Roberts around, but I'm sure the way he would have been doing it, Jamie would have just been, exactly.
Well, I mean, if he's going to get the ball in the good position, why would he not?
Exactly. It's incredible. Like the talent we've got, the guys that we've got. I think we're definitely heading to a pretty special place.
Excellent. Well, I wish you all the luck possible. Thank you so much for coming on, and hopefully we will catch up again in the future.
Yeah, I'd love to. Sounds good.
Fantastic. Superb. Recording off. Okay. Awesome. Thanks a lot, Josh. Absolutely awesome. Got all the bits and pieces that I wanted.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like, worry of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.